My name is Jennifer McKeever, and I'm with the National Network of Public Health Institutes. We are an organization that is primarily based in New Orleans. I am based in DC, and we manage the Multi-State Learning Collaborative Project, which is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We have implemented this project over the course of several years with the great leadership of both Lee Thielen and Les Beitch, who have provided us their guidance and vision and occasional mental health support as we have needed it throughout the course of the project. Lee is a consultant on public health issues, but has a special interest in public health infrastructure. She's a member of the Larimer County Board of Health and the Medical Center of the Rockies Foundation. She also chairs the Grants Committee of the Medical Center of the Rockies Foundation and is the Vice Chair of the Advisory Committee to the Center for Public Health Practice at Colorado School of Public Health. She was previously the Associate Director of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment for 16 years and enjoys working on initiatives that involve the entire public health system, including local and state health agencies and their partners. Dr. Les Beitch is on the faculty at the Florida University College of Medicine as Professor of Health Policy and Director of the Center for Medicine and Public Health. Before joining FSU, he was the Commissioner of the Oklahoma State Department of Health and worked for the Florida Department of Health at the state and local level for a dozen years. Current interests that he have focus on accreditation and quality improvement for state and local health departments through the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, or MLC. And recently, he has been appointed to the Board of Directors for the Public Health Accreditation Board. He is the past chair of the Board of Directors for the Public Health Foundation and the Public Health Leadership Society, and has recently been recognized for his contributions by ASTO with the 2007 Alumni Award and PHF, Public Health Foundation, with the 2008 Theodore Irwin Award. So I am delighted to be here today to present with both Lee and Les on the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. Since we are a small group, what we thought we would do, if it's okay with you all, is now that you know who we are, if we could just take a minute to hear who you are and what your interest in accreditation and quality improvement is. And so you have the honor of being right in my eyesight to be the first.
Sure. I'm from the Connecticut Department of Public Health, Consultant, and we just got the performance management grant from the CDC component one for a lot of other states, so we're interested in trying to set up that system and learning more about quality.
Wonderful.
Chris Malin, I'm in the Office of Public Health Practice in New York, State Health Department, and our main focus is local health departments and improving their practice.
Okay. Hi.
My name is Lily Liu, and I'm from Ventura County Public Health. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I am doing public policy and developing countywide policies, and I think we need to take it to the state afterwards.
Great, thanks.
I'm Mark Miller from the Health Department in Knoxville, Tennessee. I've had the privilege of being a test site reviewer, and we are preparing for the convention.
Hi, I'm Jeff Atala. I'm a PhD student at the University of South Carolina with a specific interest in HSSR.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Priscilla Zenza. I'm from the University of the Hospital Corporation. So I'm going to participate in this time and try what it's like from the quality of the group.
Great, thanks.
I'm Dawn Ray. I'm with North Carolina AHEC, Area Health Education Center, and we provide continuing education technical assistance to healthcare agencies.
Mm-hmm. I'm Karen Breckenridge of the Association of Public Health Laboratories, the Director of Quality Systems, and we're looking at voluntary laboratory techniques.
Okay.
I'm here at Boston Center for Substance Abuse Treatment, SAMHSA. I was interested in quality improvement for service.
Okay.
I'm Beth Sims from Northwest Corridor, Colorado, and sit on the Public Health Assessment Task Force.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Townsend. I'm with the Jefferson County Department of Health in Birmingham, Alabama. I work in policy grants and assessment division, and we do less policy, less grants, and more quality improvement, trying to mesh everything together with our accreditation initiatives that we have going on. just hired a new director of quality improvement. So we're looking forward to opportunities to work with her also.
Okay, thanks. In the back?
Henry Urban, medical also health for a Thunder Bay District Health Department, and I'm there again. We're looking at quality improvement systems at the local health department.
Thank you.
And Katie, we are the Robert Johnson Foundation and work on this project with Jennifer Lee.
And hi, I'm Ari Kramer, also with the Robert Johnson Foundation and work on these projects.
Hi, I'm Lassa Duffy, I'm a good client of Evan State Policy at Oregon Health and Science University. I just have a general interest in quality improvement.
I'm Gene Matthews with North Carolina Institute for Public Health, which is in Chapel Hill, and work on public health law, accreditation, regional session.
Okay.
Mary Davis, North Carolina Institute for Public Health, a legacy state for North Carolina.
Vice Chair May, with the Kansas Health Institute, we are one of the grantees, I received a grant from the state that we have been funding for this project for the last couple of years.
My name's George Taylor, I'm at the Muskie School of Public Service at the University of Southern Maine, and I'm part of the evaluation team evaluating the multi-state learning plan.
Hi, my name is Suzanne Delbois, I'm a public health physician. I work at the Montreal Regional Department of Public Health. We're supporting our 12 health and social services center with their modality.
Great.
Karina Works, I'm the director of the local health department in Carson City, Nevada. We're a beta test site and we'll move forward with accreditation this year.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad to see so many folks here who are new to the MLC and the information that we have to share with you all. It's hard when standing behind a podium to make a session interactive, but we have to stand here so that we can be recording this session. But I do want to let you know that we really do want to hear from you. So as we're presenting, as we're talking, if a question comes up for you, don't feel like you have to wait to the end. Please just throw your hand up and let's talk about it and see if we can help answer any questions that you have along the way. So I have to first let you know that I have no financial relationships to disclose, although if I'd known that I had the opportunity to have a financial relationship, I might have pursued it. Neither does Lee Thielen or Les Beitch. So what we're going to do today is I am quickly going to walk you through the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, or MLC, project. Just take a minute to give you sort of a high-level overview of what the project is. And then Lee and Les are really going to talk about some of the details in terms of what has this project accomplished, what have we learned from this project, and how are we looking to sustain the momentum of the project. We are primarily used to presenting to folks that are very familiar with the MLC, so if any acronym gets thrown out there or any term that you're not familiar with, please, again, just raise your hand and let us know. So what is the purpose of the MLC? There are partnerships within 16 states that are looking to prepare for accreditation, to incorporate quality improvement into their processes, so into their work at the health departments, in local health departments and state health departments. This project also has sought to inform the National Accreditation Program. So while the National Accreditation Program has been developed, it's learning from this project and what the health departments participating in this project have to offer from their experience. This project also promotes collaborative learning. We do a lot of in-person meetings and webinars and sharing of information to make this as much of a learning community as possible. And then we also aim to expand the knowledge base around accreditation and quality improvement. As I mentioned, this project has been funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and is managed by the National Network of Public Health Institutes. It's being evaluated by the Muskie School of Public Health, the Muskie School of Public Service. And we implement this project in close collaboration with our national partner organizations, such as the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, the National Association of County and City Health Officials, the Public Health Accreditation Board, the National Association of Local Boards of Health, and the Public Health Foundation, and others that I'm sure I'm forgetting. We feel it's very important to have all of these organizations and their input into the content of this program, so when we pull together meetings or webinars, we ask for their input explicitly. The other The other thing I'd like to point out about this project is that there are 16 states funded, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Each of those states, the leadership team in those states is a partnership. So although there is one agency that sort of leads the work, often the management team consists of two or three agencies. So that can be a public health institute, the Association of Local Health Departments, and the state health department, and in some cases an academic institution that also partners. So it's been a core element of this project that all of its implementation is done through partnership. The goal of the project, again, is to prepare state and locals for accreditation, to contribute to the development of voluntary accreditation program, the Public Health Accreditation Board program that's being developed, and advance quality improvement. Here's the catch, that result in specific measurable improvements, as well as the institutionalization of quality improvement practice in public health departments. I don't think we knew quite what a mouthful that was when we were writing that goal. So just to give you a quick view of the history of the program. The MLC started in 2005, and five states were funded. These were states that already had existing state-based accreditation programs, or something very similar to a state-based accreditation program for local health departments. So they came together to share their expertise and knowledge with each other, but also with a project going on called the Exploring Accreditation Project. And this was a group that was looking at, is accreditation for health departments as a national program for this, is this feasible and desirable? So MLC, the first phase of that, really informed this Exploring Accreditation Project. Another important point, that from the inception, accreditation has really been informed by what's going on in the states and at the local level. We expanded later to 10 states and started to really look at how quality improvement fits into this whole picture. So when we're looking at accreditation and getting ready for accreditation, how does quality improvement relate to that? How is accreditation a part of quality improvement? How is quality improvement a part of accreditation? And how can we explore ways to actually implement quality improvement in public health? The current phase that we're in is a 3-year project, and we have 16 states. Again, it's partnerships within 16 states that are both preparing for accreditation and implementing quality improvement. So here are the 16 states that are funded. And I want to talk just a little bit about each of those broad goals and a little bit of the activities that folks are doing under each of those goals. So we have the first one, to prepare local and state health departments for accreditation. States are doing things such as developing communication materials, holding sessions at their state public health conferences or other conferences to really get the word out about accreditation at the national level. They're also working with senior leaders to try to advance accreditation to help them see the value of potentially applying for accreditation in the future. They're pulling together health departments to do self-assessment. So there are a lot of local health departments that used the NACHO operational definition, which was a tool prior to accreditation, or the existing FAB standards now to assess their performance around accreditation. They're contributing to the voluntary program by participating on work groups. When the first draft of the standards came out, they were able to provide a review of the standards, offer their feedback around the standards that were then revised. We have a number of MLC participants who are also participants in the beta test that has been run by the Public Health Accreditation Board to actually test out the national accreditation system. And then they're sharing the lessons learned with each other. In terms of advancing quality improvement methods, the mechanism that has been done in the states is through the use of collaboratives. So in each state, they pulled together a collaborative group of health departments to learn about and implement quality improvement projects. There was a large variety in how these were implemented in the states. So some of these collaboratives had 2 to 3 health departments. Some had as many as 60 or more come together and learn about, implement quality improvement. The other thing is they were guided to focus their quality improvement on specific target areas. So there were some target areas that they were provided with at the beginning of the project, related to looking at improving some public health outcomes, as well as improving some capacity or processes. Les will talk about this a little more in a moment, but their efforts were focused on these broad target areas. I've already mentioned that partnership was a key element in this project. We've also invited really active learning, such that before we have any meeting, before we have any webinar, we really seek the input from all of the participants in the MLC. And we have been so fortunate that they're willing to offer their input. When we conduct evaluations at meetings, we have a really great response rate. And so, you know, we feel like it has been, you know, the content and the decisions that have been made in this project have really been driven by those that are participating. We also hope to expand the reach. So, you know, we started with 5 states, we went to 10 states, we then went to 16 states. We have had a couple of meetings that we've called open forums where we have invited all 50 states to attend, and in our most recent one we had representation from 44 states, so we're hoping to expand the reach that way and to the public health community as well. So that is kind of just sort of in a nutshell what the project was about and has been about. Does anybody have any questions before we move forward? Great. Then I'm going to pass it off to Lee, who is going to talk to us about what some of the MLC states have accomplished in preparing for accreditation.
Hi, and before I do that, I just wanted to say thank you for coming to Denver. We're so happy that APHA was here. This is my home. And we know that when you go back, you're going to have forgotten about the nice weather on Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And you're going to go back saying, oh, wasn't it really cold and nasty in Denver? Never go back there. Anyway, we're happy you're here. So public health accreditation. Public health has been looking for ways to show quality and accountability, I think, for a long time. I've been in this business a long time. Many of you have been in this business a long time. Our friends from Canada here are saying, yes. We have really been looking for ways to show our quality and our accountability. And we have seen it being done successfully in other industries and in our partner organizations, such as healthcare and education and the corrections industries, all kinds of areas that have found ways to do this while public health has sort of been searching for how would we go about showing our quality and our accountability. So I'm going to talk a little bit about accreditation here, about why we are involved in preparing all of these organizations that have been interested in getting ready for accreditation. The last NAHCO survey, you know, they do that wonderful profile every few years, sometimes every 2, sometimes every 3, had a very good question on it, which was, are you thinking about, are you planning on applying for accreditation? And I think some of you in the room today said you are, or you're looking at it. So 54%, now they're about, what, 3,000 local health departments, that's that kind of state health departments. That's a big number. Enthusiasm has been shown in the fact that all these agencies that have gone through the beta test, I think one or two of you here said you've been part of the beta test. There was more interest in going through the beta test than there were slots available. Our national organizations, such as NALBO, NAHCO, and ASTHO, have been strong supporters for voluntary accreditation, and really have been so involved in the shaping of it. And so those organizations representing all of us have really become strong proponents for it. So the 16 states that we've been working with have prepared for accreditation in a number of ways. They were involved early on in reviewing standards. But even before that, states such as North Carolina, Missouri, Michigan, already had accreditation programs. Huge influence on the National Voluntary Accreditation Program and how it was set up came from what we call the legacy states, the first 5 that were doing either accreditation or accreditation-like work. And so they have really been a major player in it from the beginning. Also, these 16 states, in many cases, have adopted national standards to replace their own state processes. They've looked at their areas of weaknesses and gaps in capacity. We've all been learning from each other. Believe me, we did not in any way, shape, or form set ourselves up as experts. We set ourselves up as those who would be part of this journey of learning together. There are states that have a goal that we will have 100% of our agencies accredited. I mean, that's a huge jump in a very short period of time from not even knowing what that would be. And there are state laws, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, that have been changed or have been passed to support accreditation. So again, those pioneers, particularly North Carolina, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington, but also Illinois, which through its certification program had learned a lot. The MLC state experience, as I said, has really informed the national accreditation program, and the MLC states, I think, are going to be real leaders in going through accreditation. So leading the way, the beta test sites, these are some of the state agencies that have been part of the beta test: Florida, Iowa, Michigan, Oklahoma, Washington. So 5 of the 8 state health agency beta test sites were of our 16 states. We're very proud of that. Committing to accreditation. Now, nobody's going to hold them to this, but coming from the reports that come into our office from this project, we have seen that Indiana is saying, we're targeting 2013. This is a state health agency. In some cases, for the centralized states, that's everybody. Iowa, 2011. Kansas, 2012. Montana, not sure what date, but have made the commitment. Minnesota, 2015. New Hampshire, 2013. New Jersey, 2015. North Carolina, again, not exactly sure when, but they're coming. And we know they will. Oklahoma, 2011. Washington, 2011. That's a huge commitment that we're seeing. And remember, state health agencies were way behind the local health agencies in their early support. So this is really wonderful. So some of the things that people have been doing, we have Florida, which had an accreditation collaborative with what they call players and fans, those that were part of the beta test and those that were wanted to follow what happened. Illinois, there were 6 teams doing the community health improvement plan through a collaborative through the multi-state learning project. Kansas, with its national regional accreditation project, looking at how things might happen on a regional basis. These are all Kansas here, accreditation pilot projects, 6 locals in the state health agency, a collaborative on community health assessment, 65 counties plus 8 bureaus. Michigan, Illinois, Washington, North Carolina, all using their state standards, have started to move toward national standards. In other words, the FAB recognition. Missouri is building on a strong state program and is looking, and has been for a couple of years now, how they can be a regional player. Montana, they've got 7 local health departments preparing for accreditation with, when I say legislative support, I'm talking money. Their state legislature gave them money to prepare for accreditation. Is that cool or what? North Carolina, focusing on completing the prerequisite for FAB because they know that they have not gotten everybody in line for that. In Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Health Improvement Process, again, supporting local health departments in, or local, I guess you call them divisions or bureaus or what, for accreditation.
Washington
State, always a winner, has a goal of accreditation for all. Wisconsin, 17 agencies preparing self-assessments. Challenge continues. I'm sorry, allergies just keep kicking in. Preparing state health departments for accreditation is a challenge. Every state agency is a little different. They have different governance structures. They have different program groupings. And also, local and tribal, of course, and tribal have their own challenges, and they have been players. We don't know yet whether they'll be able to, where locals be able to have a regional approach to applying for accreditation. With small, territorial, and rural health departments, it's a challenge. Some of these are very small. And how will states with existing programs align with the national program?
I don't live in Colorado, so I don't really care that you came to Denver. But I am glad you came to the conference in this session, really. And partly for that is, I've worked in public health a long time. I don't want to say exactly how many years, but Lee and I have been around for a while. She obviously looks a lot better. But this has been something that I've had more fun doing because of all that I personally have learned and what I've seen around the country, and because I'm just so enthusiastic about the improvement and the change we've seen in how public health can be practiced when people really start examining ways they can do more intentional quality improvement kinds of activities. And so let me spend just a few minutes, all right, a few hours possibly, describing how some of these events have actually taken place. And some of the things that, from a quality improvement perspective, that's been accomplished within the MLC is that states have really done a good job of learning how to manage mini collaboratives. We were not all that skilled as a group starting out, and you know, we modeled some of our work on the IHI breakthrough series, as Jennifer suggested. Some of the mini collaborators were incredibly enthusiastic and all-encompassing, and I see Tashiana out there from Kansas, and literally their latest mini collaborative encompasses most of Kansas. It's like 65 or thereabouts local health departments. Minnesota, 84 county health departments in the state, and it's, you know, so it's just an amazing all-encompassing activity. The IHI model, which we thought was going to be a good place to begin, really seemed to work very well for some aspects of our work, particularly around health status measures or health outcomes, but not quite as well for others. We learned that quality planning techniques, something that was not even on our agenda early on, works quite well for certain others. And let me just remind you for a moment, what those, again, the difference between the capacity outcome target areas and the outcome target areas. And so, you know, health status is largely the ones on your right, reducing the incidence of vaccine preventable disease, risk factors predisposing to chronic disease, infant mortality, tobacco, alcohol. Whereas capacity process ones on the left, like community health profiles, health improvement planning, now two of the huge components for FAB, for public health accreditation, as prerequisites, assuring a competent workforce and customer service kinds of activities, culturally appropriate services. Those are activities that didn't lend themselves quite as well to the breakthrough series. Now, the mini collaboratives, in our view, have provided opportunities to really increase knowledge of QI and to teach that and to learn it. And what we have found is that we're in states where it was a very structured process, which I'll come back to in a few moments, a lot of hands-on activities, a lot of sessions, there was much greater learning in those places. So, training and technical assistance, you know, how is it that you teach new things to people who are adult learners? And you got to use adult learner models. And for, you know, I think most of you are probably familiar with that. That is kind of, the, you know, one component of that is just-in-time training. So give people the information they need to know in order to work on something specific. But equally as importantly is you give them that, you expose them to a tool, have them apply that particular tool in that setting. That seems to have much broader effect or much greater effect than say, okay, here's how you do this quality improvement, a cause and effect diagram. Here's how you do a radar chart. Without giving context and helping people with its use. We found that in-person training, our colleagues at the Muskie Institute, was found to be more effective. Most of the mini collaborators successfully mixed a variety of methods in terms of technical assistance and training. There were face-to-face sessions, and again, that was very consistent with the IHI breakthrough series models. But then they employed webinars in a very creative way, technical assistance site visits. I'll highlight Missouri here. They were working at one time with 12 small local health departments, went out specifically in between sessions over one of their planning cycles to visit with each one how they were using the tools to actually implement their projects. The same thing in New Hampshire and I'm sure other states as well. And things worked also well where there was an expectation that, you know, we're meeting or having a webinar this month or face-to-face meeting this month. You've got homework using that particular tool. You need to turn that in, share that with your colleagues. And I think that was done very well in Minnesota, in Montana, and probably some other places as well. There were a lot of different approaches, and as many approaches as there were mini collaboratives. And again, there's a lot of ways of accomplishing these activities. I mentioned Missouri's working with 12 local health departments, but they worked with the same small local health departments over the entire three-year cycle of the grant. And so their thought there was to really strengthen and build capacity within those 12 health departments. And they did something that literally none of the others did, probably because it wasn't how we had framed the grant, really. And that is, they had those 12 local health departments work on a project that was identified by that local health department as an identified need. And so you got the buy-in of those local health departments, and they were able to see the power of some very basic quality improvement tools. And from there, they moved on to those 10 target areas that you've now seen a couple times. Minnesota and Iowa employed a lot of different activities, but used Kaizen events to galvanize support because you could get a quick win, a quick turnaround. And let me show you quickly what a Kaizen is. A very staged, rapid quality improvement event, usually done over a few days. And a couple of examples here relate to, in this one, this is in Minnesota. This is a infant metabolic screening program in Minnesota. And a couple things I would point out is, you know, kind of the pre-Kaizen, it took 52 and a half days to accomplish this particular metabolic screening process. And at its conclusion, roughly the end of that week, it took 23, you know, a little over 23 and a half days. Now, I'm going to suggest that that's still too long, but okay. But look at what they did to the number of tasks, reducing it from 61 to 25, the number of handoffs from 36 to 15. But look at decisions, 11 to 2. I do work in patient safety because I'm pretending to work at a medical school. You have to do these things. That's very much the quality improvement version of what they do in the healthcare sector. And it's very well understood in the healthcare sector that every time you have a handoff, so here you're having 36 handoffs. Every time you have a handoff, you exponentially increase your potential for an error of some kind, a drop, a loss, a misplace. So when you do this from 36 to 15, you're doing a lot better. Here is an infant screening program, hearing screening program, where again, they reduced the total time there incredibly from almost 60 days to nearly 20 days. And look at the waiting period, and the tasks were reduced by half, and the handoffs and decisions. Now, so let me go back here for a second. So Kaizen events are really, they're really more a very fancy form of flow charting, for those of you who are familiar with flow charting, and they rely quite heavily on swim lanes so that everybody sees what everyone else is responsible for, and then you map those things and begin to look at what an optimal system could begin to look like. Let me just mention again, Kansas and Minnesota, where they took a statewide approach within their mini collaborators, very, very ambitious. And Illinois took 10 teams, but have kept them in mini collaborators for the full 22 months. And the reason I point that out is, much like in Missouri, it's really concentrating the dose of QI learning within those teams. And so it, from an evaluation standpoint, it might be kind of interesting to see, did they learn more in those places that had that concentrated dose, George, versus, you know, those places that may have only had, you know, a 6 month or 8 month exposure to those doses, okay? So the IHI model, though, did work very well for some of the health status kinds of areas, again, health outcomes. And that seemed to reflect areas where there was greater control by the health department. South Carolina did that to very good effect when they implemented tobacco cessation efforts within their own health departments. They felt like it's great that we're talking about smoking cessation to the entire state, to the entire healthcare community. Wouldn't it be nice if we were actually following the tobacco guidelines within our own organization? And they did that by piloting it in a couple of areas within the health departments in counties like Marlboro and Chesterfield, South Carolina, again, to greater effect. And when it worked, that became a statewide initiative and is going now. As I mentioned earlier, the plan, do, check, act cycle seemed to work a little less well with capacity targets, but quality planning, though, seemed to work well, and Illinois and Washington State implemented it. I want to tell a quick New Hampshire story. New Hampshire took on obesity. And, you know, one of the challenges in obesity is, you know, the usual puns. It's a growing problem. It's massive. But the real challenge in terms of implementing an intervention is, how do you get your arms around something just so huge? No pun intended. And, you know, I think that they took some very thoughtful approaches, and I'll give you just two examples. One is they looked at four clinics within a small district in New Hampshire and examined their medical records for use of BMI. And they found the rates to be, you know, in just the, you know, less than 10% to as high as, you know, over 50%, but pretty much on the low end, and implemented a process to get that up to very close to 100%, and they accomplished that. And then moved from there to interventions for kids who had those higher BMIs and began to, again, just build that process. In another area of the state, they looked at bringing healthy snacks for second graders. And so they started with one classroom in a school. Then they spread that to all classrooms within second grade, then all classrooms in that school, and then to all the schools in that school district. And so you can begin to see how to thoughtfully implement something. Bringing healthy snacks, that's not the end of the obesity problem in New Hampshire, but you begin to see things that you can measure and track to tell you what you're doing can work. And then you think of additional strategies that are consistent with where you're trying to go. Okay? So what have we learned? Well, we can't tell you everything that we learned. Well, maybe we can. We've got a little extra time. You know, the learning community that's part of MLC, you know, has really, you know, I think been very effective because it's pulled people together for a common cause. When we had our very first meeting with the five legacy states in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Lee and I and Jennifer and others are having a pre-meeting outside, and I was very concerned, and I wasn't the only one, that the group of representatives from the five states, would they want to talk with each other? Would they share? Would they be a peer community? And so the longer we were waiting outside, getting ready to go to the meeting, those five states were in the meeting. By the time we got in there, they had already bonded as a group. And it was off and running from the beginning, that sharing of information. So creating a peer network where there's an ongoing exchange of information among peers, each of whom may have expertise in a specific area that they're willing to share with others. It also fosters a very healthy competition. You know, states want to be the best within the multi-state learning collaborative. The states that aren't the legacy states want to show the legacy states how good they are. And, you know, that rich exchange of ideas that all of us have found, you know, very important. We've learned really right from the start that accreditation is not only feasible, it's desirable. And it's through the MLC-1 first process that informed how FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, has been created. You know, but for those experiences with MLC, showing that accreditation not only can be done, it should be done, has fostered the entire accreditation movement. And through quality improvement and accreditation and the use of many collaborative fields, moving the field forward. What else? What about on the quality improvement side? Some of these things are very basic kinds of learning for me, but starting is the most important and hardest part. And I say that because I've talked to people from all over the country who ask how they should get started. What can we do to get started? And, you know, my answer is start to get started. And I'll show you a slide here in a minute that may help explain that. Quality improvement is something that takes time, dedicated time, and it's part of your job. In so many places, the thought about what is quality improvement and how do I do it, it's not an additional task that you do within your job as a nurse practitioner or a WIC nutritionist or a health educator. It's part of being those things. And our understanding that it isn't a separate task, it's part of that role. And in fact, the Council on Linkages has specific quality improvement competencies for public health workers. But it takes time to develop those skills. Big QI and little QI. Does everybody know the difference between those two? Okay, well, I do. All right, I'll tell you then. All right. Big QI is the whole concept of managing performance at the enterprise level. It's looking at how all aspects of the organization are operating harmoniously to achieve the best possible outcomes for that organization. So it's very much macro, big picture. And it's within the purview of management, but not exclusively so. Little QI is the type of plan, do, check, act cycle you do on any process or program. So it's taking at the level of an intervention or planning, using a very organized system to look at your data and improve that process. That's little QI. And it turns out you need to do both, but you can do either one before the other is not so important. Building capacity is something that does take time. I know a few folks in here are here because they're doing the CDC infrastructure grant, and you know that you have a year to do that. That grant, if it's not a five-year grant and a fully funded five-year grant, probably won't be successful. Some of the results won't be measurable in a lasting, impactful way, but because it does take time. And we've seen through 5 years of the MLC, it takes a huge amount of time to do that. A lot of repetition. Being part of a learning community is a big part of it, and also bringing in consultants. There's a relatively small but growing cadre of people around the country who are either experts in public health and know a bit about quality improvement, or who are experts in quality improvement who are learning a bit about public health, who can help you shorten some of the cycle time in some of these activities. This is a diagram I've stolen from Jack Moran, one of many things I have stolen from him over the years. And this just shows you this ribbon that literally quality improvement and its implementation is a continuous band. And so it doesn't matter where you choose to start on that band. It's that you choose to start and that you go ahead and begin that process. Okay?
What does QFD stand for?
What does which stand for?
QFD on the bottom. That's the advanced tools.
I did know that. Quality function deployment. That is... Yeah, this is about quality planning, the quality function deployment. We're not doing much quality function deployment, so I won't spend time on that. Yeah, so, but you're using all of those kinds of things. So quality function deployment may relate to things like, you know, as basic as even having Gantt charts and other things for your planning process. I'm gonna show you this slide quickly a couple of times. But yeah, you know, for me, this is a little bit like Sisyphus pushing a very large boulder up an incline. You know, when you're at the bottom, it's not that hard to move the rock just a little bit. But as you go up the incline, it's a lot harder. You should start quality improvement in an environment where you have the most control, where you can accomplish the most things well within your organizational capacity. But in public health, so much is done external to public health, or the problem is more complex. As you add layers of complexity, you move up this incline in what's called rapid cycle improvement. So each one of these three circles is a plan, do, check, act cycle. Okay. We learned that not all many collaborators are created equally or had similar results. And I hinted at some of these things already, that you know, having very well-scheduled events and sessions, monthly seemed to be quite good, was important. Structured models rather than ad hoc kind of fluid free-forming things seemed to work, the structure seemed to work better. And the ones that had learning sessions in between webinars and other things did better. Recognizing that people are adult learners, that they need to actually use those tools, that they need to deploy those tools to something that's a problem that's meaningful for them. And there needs to be homework. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be painful homework, but it has to be homework. And the technical assistance can be done a variety of ways. So let me bring you to a couple other things. I want to talk about, how are we doing? I've only got 2 more hours worth of slides. We're good. There's been a lot of sessions during this meeting about quality improvement and accreditation, and so we've added an extra circle. So for me, the world falls into either Venn diagrams or concentric circles, so I'm going to show you both. But you know, in this case, accreditation, not everything in accreditation is quality improvement, but a lot of it is or could be and should be, in my view. Quality improvement has some applications in, obviously, in accreditation, but not everything having to do with accreditation, with quality improvement, relates to accreditation. And, you know, we have found through our work that the mini collaboratives within the multi-state learning collaborative can enhance or strengthen both accreditation and quality improvement. And so our work is in search of that blue sort of sweet spot, if you will, where you get an effect for all of those things. So some of the findings that we had from our years together through the multi-state learning collaborative is we saw quite a bit improvement with little QI, as I described before. So through the mini collaboratives and trying to work on target areas, we were doing programmatic process QI, with a little QI. Not so much did we see a lot of strengthening with big QI, with the exception of a few states, however. I think Oklahoma, South Carolina, and even Florida did improve their overall performance management systems. That's what big QI is, with some of the resources from MLC. As you know from Lee's part, that it promoted readiness for accreditation with two of the three prerequisites for starters, as well as customer satisfaction and the use of the quality improvement tools to aid in quality planning. But likewise, through the mini collaboratives and the targeted types and the target areas, there was almost a mandate to look at evidence-based practices. And if you think about it, when you're preparing for accreditation, domain 10 in part B is about deployment of an evidence-based practices. So there's a lot going on within the multi-state learning collaborative then to move you along. So for example, in domain, yes, please.
Slide.
You may.
As you were talking before you got to this slide.
So Kim, I should go back even further?
No. But I what I was thinking about prior to this one, I was wondering what impact this would have on the local level, because it would seem that this effort would have more of an impact on the state level. And the big QI versus the little QI, this seems counterintuitive.
Well, let me try again. Yeah. A lot of this is going to depend on governance. Every state is modestly has different things in place. There are centralized states, decentralized states, and I'm going to assume that you're familiar with those differences. But there's a need for big QI within every organization. So there should be a performance management process at a local health department or a state health department. And the same with little QI. There are processes and procedures that need to be in place and interventions with any program that you're going to do in both settings. So did I miss your point?
Not quite sure. It seems to me that this effort, when you talk about the collaborative, the way I was hearing it, I could be way off base, but this was that the learning was like state to state level. Talking about the five states getting together, being at a meeting, I took it to be that the states are working together more.
Okay. Well, actually, most of the mini collaboratives, I'm glad you pointed that out. That we had regular meetings as a 5, 10, and 16 state collaborative. Then we would all meet together. But in between those meetings, the regular work that was done by the mini collaborative were within the state. So there would be teams within the state. So Illinois, as an example, had 10 teams that were meeting regularly. Those 10 teams were local health departments. A key omission of that term. But sometimes the teams were also state health department teams that were part of those mini collaboratives. So the benefit actually was greater at the local health department level, which there should be a bullet up here saying, in my view, the local health departments, the way the mini collaboratives were set up, were the primary beneficiaries more so than state. But Jennifer's going to correct this for me. Yeah, but what state are you from, to give us just some context? South Carolina. Okay, well, South Carolina was, all right, you said you're in a graduate program. Yeah, they were a very actively engaged state. So they're one of those states where there was a lot of learning, I thought, at both the state level and the local health departments. But it's a centralized system there, as you probably know, but not everyone here does. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah, just talk to Mary afterwards, and she'll tell you all that.
Ah.
Oh, okay. Know each other from Denver. And the AHEC program in my state is in my office, so we make sure they're involved in these things.
For anybody else who's interested that doesn't have that immediate contact in the room, we will at the end show our website where you can access all of the information about the states and get more details.
Okay. These are actual, draft FAB standards right now. So these standards will be under revision based on the results of the beta test. So everything's fair game. But, domain 9 is the one about really that focuses on quality improvement. And within that, there are some clear standards here for forming an agency performance management system. So having big QI in place. Likewise, standard 9.2 is about implementing quality improvement efforts. So having training, having quality improvement. That's the little QI side of the house. And finally, Domain 10, which is in the Central Public Health Service 10, is about research. But this is identifying and using evidence-based and promising practices. And our sense is that MLC, through the many collaboratives, fostered the use of evidence-based practices as part of the work within many collaboratives. Okay, I'm going to shift gears here in a second, but some good questions. Any other kinds of questions related to that? No. Let me just share a couple thoughts. One is, how does what the quality improvement in public health differ from the healthcare delivery system? I'm writing a paper. I've been writing this paper forever, and I'll just give you the title because it's really, the title says it all for me. Why Don Berwick Was Almost Right, how public health quality improvement operates in complex systems. Now, unfortunately, that's the most part of the paper that I've actually written, and I need to get some of those words down. But the title is really catchy. Don Berwick is the current head of in the HHS Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, CMS. So, the people who spend most of the healthcare dollars in our country. The difference being, most of the things that happen in a hospital or a clinical practice happen within the four walls of that organization or the campus of that hospital. They are fully within the control of the healthcare delivery system. The equivalent of that is the manufacturing process. I used to say about Toyota before they had all the recalls. But a process that literally every moving part is within full control of the enterprise or organization. Well, there are some things within public health for which that's true. But I would propose or suggest to you that some of those things are processes. There are going to be things like your contracting process, your HR system sometimes, depending on your organization, how it's done. It might even be your own clinical lab. But for the most part, most of the things that you do within public health, within a state or local health department, aren't within full control. They're not within the four corners of that campus. And the things that matter most have many moving parts, or they're parts of a complex system. So I mentioned before that everything for me is either a Venn diagram or a concentric circle. So if you're going to accomplish something within the world of quality improvement, it's important to have an aim. What is it that you're trying to actually accomplish? And so there are three premises for how that ought to be done. One is that it needs to be measurable. So you need to know what it is that you're trying to actually accomplish. And so you'll know when you're successful or not successful, that it's time bound, that by January 1st, 2012, 40% of the health departments in South Carolina will be fully accredited, that it's discrete, that it's very clear what that one thing that you're going to do is. We're going to reduce the infant mortality rate in Kansas, or Sedgwick County, Kansas, more specifically, from blank to blank by January 1, 2012. That would be a good aim statement so that you would know whether you're getting there or not. Okay? Then again, I want to bring this back now after I've sort of introduced the concept of complex systems, that yes, that when I showed you the slide before, it's you're attempting to do something from a quality improvement perspective through rapid cycle improvements. So you're deploying quality improvement cycles three times here. But each of these is with an increasing level of complexity. And within public health, that means you're probably bringing in more moving parts. So it's not just done within the health department itself, but it's done within the external community. So let me just break this up a couple more ways. The things that you have full control over, they're more likely to take place. I don't have a pointer. So they're more likely to take place in here. Okay, so this is the health department building or the health department campus, if you will. And you can control that process if it's something that's done in that building. But let's say it may be the flow for an immunization clinic within that building, maybe even an H1N1 clinic, okay? But because there are all kinds of organizations and people doing H1N1 or immunizations, in most places, most of the immunizations aren't done by public health. That's not true everywhere. When I first moved to Florida, almost all the immunizations were done by a local health department in Florida. Now, relatively few of those immunizations are actually still being done, but more immunizations are being done. And so what's happening? They're moving to the outer circles there and having influence then on other partners within the broader public health system. There's the local health department, state health department, and now partners who are doing, for example, those things. So the focus when you're at the innermost part of the circle is very much internal. But as you think about how you bring in other practices that are going to do immunizations or help you reduce obesity or whatever, you focus less internally and start to focus externally. And so when you think again about going up that incline in those plan, do, check, act cycles, you're bringing in those other partners. Finally, when you're doing those things, you know, in the innermost circle, they're often operational. And so by operational, they may mean improving your contracting process, your infant metabolic screening process, something you have complete control over. But then as something gets more complex, these become strategic things. If you want to improve the infant mortality rate or the immunization rate in your state or local health department, in your state or county, it isn't going to be accomplished by doing only a better job within the four corners of your building or your campus. It's by bringing those partners in. And finally, actually this slide has an error, that the innermost part of that circle is really about capacity. And as you move out, it's about process. And finally, it's about achieving the outcomes that you want to achieve, whether it's a health status change or any other kind of change. Turn it back to Dave.
Well, we've been on a great ride, and this ride will end in 2011. To a great extent, it ends in April of 2011. And one of the things that we're, of course, interested in is, so where now, where, what have we accomplished? What will still be here in improving the public health infrastructure in this country when the multi-state learning collaborative is a very fond memory for many of us? So it's really, I think we've had a story of tremendous progress. We didn't know how it would all work out. I think the states have been very pleased, with at least that's what they tell us, with the experience. We have been basking in the knowledge we've learned, the joy we've had with this journey. And now we're looking at, so what's going to still be there? What will remain? So I'd like to talk a little bit about that now. So the question is how to continue the great work of 5 years. Oh, I should talk about this quote. I come from South Dakota originally, and I've always had a fondness for country music lyrics. And, you know, there are things like, I'll be over you, and they're 6 feet over me, and if you leave me, will you take me along? And but this one I thought was just wonderful, because it's the dilemmas that we always have when we have to make decisions. I don't know whether to kill myself or go bowling, I think really caught it for me, of these decisions that we make about what's next. So how to continue that great work, how to integrate the concepts of quality improvement into accreditation and accreditation into quality improvement until we see those as not really separate but part of the same package. How to continue a successful network of 16 states with many dedicated, energized professionals once the project ends. Before we started, someone working on evaluation of accreditation in one state had no one to talk to. They didn't know who else was doing this. Now they know. So we want to have that network continue in some way, and whether it just happens organically or with help is a bigger question. So some of the sustainability. Some of the sustainability is through legislation, and I always say policy trumps program. And once you put something in law or you put it in rule, it is much more likely to have an impact. North Carolina started with legislation. They were unique. Iowa has its state accreditation in law. Iowa created during this time its own state accreditation program, which is still sort of in a pilot phase, but they see it as preparing themselves for national accreditation by first being able to meet their state standards and thus being able to meet national standards. And there's a good country music lyric for that too. How can I call it cheating when she reminds me of you? Montana supports accreditation through law. I said that before. They actually had legislation that passed about preparing local agencies, preparing for accreditation, giving them money to do it. Wisconsin has been talking about revising its public health law, which is Chapter 140, to include accreditation standards. North Carolina is always our star. They formed a Center for Public Health Quality and got from private money $4.7 million. Quality improvement in North Carolina is going to march forward. Partnerships will also endure, especially with the institutes, public health institutes, and academia. We really didn't talk about that much. When we talked about those state teams and the state folks that came together, that was, yes, state health departments, local health departments, but it was also academia, public health institutes, and other partners that were part of looking at how to improve the public health infrastructure. Online training. That online training is still going to be there. And some of this has been, I think we heard from Kansas, that part of their sustainability is making this kind of training available through AHEX and so forth. Financial support for accreditation in some states. The network of peers, now you all know each other in the 16 states. It's great. You aren't going to lose those email addresses and those telephone numbers. We have identified through this process consultants with very unique quality improvement experience that we did not know before we started. And it came out of Minnesota, it came out of Washington State, it came out of Oklahoma, and came out of all these different places where these individuals now are part of the technical assistance and training infrastructure that can carry forward. We think that FAB recognition by these 16 states will be perceived as an incentive, and that will carry forward. National associations are working together beautifully to enhance accreditation and quality improvement. That wasn't happening 4 years ago. There's a renewed commitment of funders, particularly the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Centers for Disease Control, to support public health investments in infrastructure, and we've seen that in a number of things that you are only too well aware of. So, in bringing this to a close, we really can do this. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. Not everything is a success. Not all these mini collaboratives were successful. We probably didn't say that. We didn't expect them to be. But people were learning, and that was a success. And then they try another one, and maybe that one was more successful. So strive to be a success, and that is what will carry us forward. I think this is pretty cool. There's a goal that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has about 60%. 60% of the population in the United States will be served by accredited local health departments. Well, through the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, we have at least impacted a third of the country, and as far as population goes. It doesn't mean that everybody's going to be accredited, but we think that this was the start of that really important reach to meet that goal by 2015. So, there we go with more information. Did you want to take over for questions?
So we did want to leave some time at the end for questions and some discussion. So let me just open it up and see, does anybody have any questions for any of us up here? How do you or how have we?
You want to bring what?
The accreditation.
Yes.
They're not having it resident. I think we can all answer that, but I'll start.
Go ahead.
Do you mind repeating the question for us? Because we can't hear what the question is.
Absolutely.
The question has to do with the experience of California, which has not been part of this, and how can she, is that correct to say, bring home this desire and this movement toward accreditation and quality improvement. And I appreciate your dilemma. I think there are a number of ways. One is the national partners. Now, California's part of, your local health department's a part of NACHO, your state health department's a part of ASTHO, your local health departments may be part of NALBO. Of course, we're all part of APHA. They have, in their organizations, resources to go to from those national organizations to help move them forward. We have, of course, reached out to all the states, and most of the states have come to our open forums when we have had those big meetings where we pulled people in, and I think California was represented.
Yes.
I think California was represented our last open forum, and we can tell you who that is, so if we can find out who that is. So you can talk to that person. Also, you have other things at play within your state. You have great foundations and institutes that are really quite strong assets in your particular state. There are many ways to bring this forward. One of the things, because Colorado wasn't part of the Multi-State Learning Collab, and this is where I live, and this is where I work, but we made a point at every Colorado Public Health Association meeting, we brought in somebody to talk about national accreditation. We brought in people to talk about quality improvement. So you have those opportunities through your state or associations to keep bringing that message home. And usually you can get these speakers for nothing, which is really good. Yeah.
Let me add just one thing, and I'm probably frustrating the recording part here, but one of the health departments that was actually showcased at the Open Forum, so we not only did MLC states, but we invited all of our national partners and others who were doing work in this area, whether it's accreditation or quality improvement, part of the beta tests and so on, to come. And Los Angeles Health Department is doing an awful lot of work. I don't know where you live in California. I know it's a slightly large state. Where?
Ventura County.
Ventura County, okay. Well, there is a lot going on. I don't know where Ventura County is, and I should. Okay, so you're close. And so there are some people there, Don Jacobson being maybe a good person to contact. We can share that information. But there is good stuff going on. The other question is, how might you begin yourself in Ventura County? And one of the other things that we didn't spend time talking about, but one of the great tools and instruments that can be used to get you going is the National Public Health Performance Standards Program. They have state, local, and governance instruments. And, looking at, I don't know if you went to any sessions on those, but the National Public Health Performance Standards are a great way to get people within your health department, in your community, thinking about doing an assessment about where all of you are in terms of being able to deliver the 10 essential public health services as a public health system, but then where might you begin to focus and concentrate some of your efforts, and you would already be doing the assessment part that could be used for a community health improvement plan. So just a little tip there.
I didn't mention your state show. You have one or maybe even two state shows. And I think you have two state shows. In other words, there's associations of your local leaders. I think one's with medical officers and one's with your health administrators. And that is a great way to impact that group. You're getting the leadership that makes those decisions. And again, in Colorado, at our state show, our council, we would every year bring in those speakers to talk about it. So our people really knew all along what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's a good resource.
Okay, thanks. Can you repeat the National Public Health Performance Standards?
National Public Health Performance Standards Program. And if you just look at those letters and go to cdc.gov and put a search in for that, so cdc.gov, you'll pull up the instruments, the program office, and places where you can get a lot of information. And you can feel free to contact nnphi.org, too, to get information.
Yep. Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about quality measurement in terms of the measures of quality. And you made the point, this is what I heard you say, that in some ways clinical medicine is, particularly the hospital environment, which you described as simple and discreet, and yet a lot of clinical care isn't that way. And an example being chronic disease. And Don Berwick developed a chronic illness care model, which showed so many factors involved in that. So it seems to me that the area that really needs development is an inventory of public health quality measures that can be part of the quality improvement effort. And I'm just wondering if any one of you could talk about where that is in its evolution.
Well, I can tell you just very quickly, and the only reason I know what I know is I was in a I was at a presentation about a month or so ago at an ASTO meeting, as it turns out, but someone from the National Quality Forum, a woman named Bonnie Zell, they are beginning the effort to actually put together a set of an inventory, specifically the word you used, of quality improvement measures for public health. I think that's going to be a little bit of a, you know, that'll be an evolutionary pathway. I mean, you know, it'll take a little bit of time. I would also suggest there's an Institute of Medicine report that's going to come out in the next week or two that's going to also make that recommendation and even begin to point out some of the domains that such an inventory might include. So, but I was also trying to say something else, and you heard something far more intelligent than what I was trying to say, so I like what you heard. But what I was also saying is we frequently measure things. They're not always the right things to measure. And so we've got to be really careful about that. And, you know, there's an old adage in quality improvement, and all of you have heard it, what gets measured gets done. So you want to be certain that what you're measuring is the right thing to measure for what you want to get done. And I think we don't fully know what those all are in public health by any stretch, but not until we have those conversations about it. But that's a good analogy, though, for chronic disease. But final just thought here is the reason that chronic care model and other things are such a disaster in terms of the healthcare delivery system and why we have so many problems with it is because, you know, when you think about it, most of the time when you need healthcare, you're not actually in the physician's office or the hospital, you're somewhere else. You're in the community. Where are you? You're actually where public health takes place. And so we developed all these incredibly elaborate systems for those very small periods of time that you're actually directly intersecting the healthcare delivery system, when the other 99.8 or so percent of the time, you're actually in the public health system. And so those two haven't been married in a way that many other countries have long since taken as a given. And so that's a whole different conversation.
Other questions? Mary.
Well, I just wanted to follow up with what Les was talking about in terms of those capacity targets, because we chose to tackle the workforce target and really ended up using more quality planning tools than an actual quality improvement classic breakthrough series model. And so I'll put in a plug to one of my most recent webinars, fake webinars from MLC with last Friday's webinar. Is that available on the website, Jennifer?
Yep. If you go to this website, you'll find a number of webinars that have been archived, including this one that you're talking about.
And this was about using quality planning tools, and it just was in a nutshell some of the struggles that we have around workforce targets. And I found that just incredible.
Right, Mary, and I'd like to make a plug as well that we actually will be having two webinars in the coming months, one on December 17th and one on April 1st, that we will be opening up to anybody who's interested in attending. I've just circulated a piece of paper right now where you can put down your name and email address, and we will add you to the email list to help you get resources over the coming months. We didn't mention it specifically, but this project is slated to end in April of 2011. And so over the coming months, we're really going to be making a push to get out information about all of the lessons learned from this project. So if you, I see the list is in the back of the room on this side right now. If you want to add your name, please do, and we'll forward you emails, and you can unsubscribe at any time. Is that it?
Yeah, there may not be any other questions. Oh, I saw almost a hand, but I'm wondering, Tashiana is here from Kansas. George Taylor's here from Muskie. You know, Mary just had a comment. I'm wondering if you guys have anything you'd like to throw in just in terms of, you know, what we've been talking about from your perspectives. Don't, you know, it's up to you. I don't want to.
Well, one of the things that we've been looking at is just the, we've been doing a lot of case studies. They did a presentation yesterday looking at some case studies we've done in 12 of the states in terms of quality improvement. And one of the things that, no great surprise, that we've learned from visiting a lot of local health departments across the country as part of this project is that
the opportunity to kind of practice these quality improvement processes frequently is one of the best things, because in some of the states we visited, there weren't ample opportunities to do that. And so one of the things we learned is some of those skills stagnated. And that the states that have in the latter years of this initiative have really, I think, sought to provide frequent opportunities. In fact, they've almost kind of scaled back on the number of tools, but really focused on application. And I think if you're embarking upon that, is don't overwhelm your colleagues. If you're working at the state level, don't overwhelm local health departments with a lot of tools, but provide a sufficient number, but get out there and give them opportunities to practice. Take home messages we've learned.
My name is Tatiana, and I'm with Kansas team, project management team. And one thing I want to mention, George just mentioned, we, after the project is closing, coming to the end, trying to see how we can sustain. And we talked to the local health department, and they said something that's really critical for them will be this ongoing training. But they said that online training of webinars and software is sufficient, so they would like somehow to have this point of contact, somebody that will come and do this, you know, kind of on site, like right training, and they help them out on this. So we are working in partnership with IHAC Center in Kansas, called Station Local Health Department, State Department, and trying to figure out how to have this training not just available through our online training, but something that can have other efforts and how to specifically with accreditation in mind, how to get this kind of knowing we need, because we have done the assessment to know where the capacity needs are and how we can really target that. And because you have some like a leadership institute in Kansas, Public Leadership Institute, but it was like they were meeting in person four times a year and doing some coursework. So we're trying to revamp this idea and put more like accreditation and the goal of accreditation to do this in partnership.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody definitely said that more training, more QI training on the project as well, where this network is essential.
Yeah, Tatiana, and I think what we have continued to hear is as we've tried, and all of the states have tried various methods of training online, distance learning, et cetera, we continue to hear the message that face-to-face is invaluable. Yeah.
The earlier in your presentation, you mentioned a statistic that 54% were looking to revoke accreditation. I can't remember what period of time that was in.
I think it was in the next 3 years.
Next 3 years. Yeah. I remember the year at the beginning was wondering about, is it a question of that there's some sort of negative perception around accreditation, or whether people are just not really about it, or something else altogether?
I can tell you this is opinion, okay, this is just opinion, so you take it for what it's worth. There are those that are just gonna go for it right now, and I think FAB's gonna be real busy just dealing with those that have made that commitment. I mean, we've seen them in every state. I mean, it's Tony Smithing. I want to be the first one in my state to be accredited. It's, you know, we have that going on in a number of the real champions, and that's going to be real fast. What we've seen in our surveys is that, and I say our surveys, I'm really talking about Georgia's surveys, I'm talking about the evaluation, is that as they learn more, some of them are saying, I'm going to wait another year, because I'm realizing this is a little more complex than a real first thought. So some of those are going to say, yeah, I'm actually going to do it, but I'm realizing I need a little bit more time. Then there are those that are going to say, what's in it for me? Oh, I just saw some grant opportunities I can't apply for. You know, then they'll be the next round. You know what I mean? Or they'll be the peer pressure. Oh, 12 of our 15 health departments have gotten accredited and 3 have it, result pressure. So it's going to go in waves, I'm convinced. That's opinion.
Well, and I'll add to that opinion. I think we were actually shocked that more than 50% said that they were interested in applying, given that exploring accreditation finished in 2006, that was incorporated in 2007. You know, what's kind of shocking for those of us who have been in these sessions over the last several years at APHA is nobody's saying, why are you doing this anymore? There's very few people saying that. It's actually, how do we do it? Who's getting ready? Give me the tools. How do I sign up tomorrow? And so if you think 54% of the 2,700 health departments, let's say
thinking about doing that in the first 3 years that FAST opens the business starting next year, then I think there's, you know, as Lee said, build it and they will come. They're there. They've got a good starting state. So I kind of see it as a slightly different way.
And the just FYI, the School of Public Health in South Carolina is a very close partner with the MLC and has provided a lot of quality improvement training information. If you want to make that connection, let us know and we'll. Okay, great. Any other questions? Well, great. I hope everybody has a great afternoon and thanks so much for attending.